You are listening to the Mashti Community Podcast. Here we share recordings from our panel discussions, which contains open conversations where often overlooked topics are explored from fresh perspectives. We bring together community members, people with lived experience, and sometimes experts to share stories, insights, and way of navigating what life brings. We are not here as experts, just creating a space for voices that might resonate or be useful to someone else. You're always welcome to join us as a guest or part of the audience. You can read more at our website, mashticommunity.no. Hi, I'm Homa, founder of Mashti Community, and welcome to the second episode of our podcast series on alternative relationship forms. This episode was recorded in March 2025, and in this talk, we explore the complexities of solo polyamory, a relationship model that challenges conventional ideas of love, commitment, and autonomy. I hope you enjoy the conversation. If you do, please also consider subscribing and checking out our other events, which we post pretty frequently on our website and Instagram. You will find the link in the episode description. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you so much for letting me facilitate this and hosting this with some guests. And welcome to the third panel discussion on polyamory and alternative relationships, facilitated by me in collaboration with Mashti Community. Yay! And my name is Thea, and I use she, her pronouns. And yeah, today we have a maybe a topic that is a bit niche within the polyamorous culture. And I'm very happy that we have some guests here today. But to get us settled a bit, I think that you've already settled yourself a bit, but I would like you to, you know, get comfortable in your seat. Maybe you would like to move a bit. Maybe take one more sip of water before we start. And whomever wants to do a quick, like, three breaths with me, that would be great, because I feel like I need it, so I'll do that. And you can close your eyes or leave them open, and we can take a deep breath in and out through the mouth. One more time in and out. And last one in and out. All right. Thank you so much. We will not do a huge introduction round on you guys, but I want you to feel included. So you will be in a short minute after we have some introduction of our guests. And myself, someone said before that I think she's the facilitator of this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm the facilitator. But I may also put some or share some things about my own solo polyamory identity and process. And sort of the introduction to solo polyamory came quite recently to me as something that I kind of identify as. And I realized I've been doing that for some years now, which I found very, you know, interesting. And that kind of sparked my curiosity and why I wanted to have some guests and also inspirational input from you, Homa. And yeah, and in terms of like what I meant by niche, I think that solo polyamory is sort of a juxtaposition where you have the solo, the singular, the one person, and the polyamory, the multiple people, the many. And that creates maybe some challenges, both for ourselves to identify with, but also in terms of where we belong in the non-monogamy and polyamory sort of roster, where we position ourselves. And today we're not speaking as experts, I would say, we're speaking as people with lived experiences. And so, yeah, warm welcome to Rodrigo and Margarita. Mm-hmm. Yay!
Thank you.
You want to start?
You want me to start?
Up to you.
I can start. Yeah. That's okay. Fine. Hi, everyone. It's super lovely to see lots of familiar faces and lots of not familiar faces. I hope I get the opportunity to speak to you tonight and to get to know all of you a little bit better, I guess, through the topic of polyamory and specifically solo polyamory. If it's something that you practice, you're curious about, you might have some questions and such. I'm originally Italian, but I grew up abroad for a majority of my life. I think the last time that I lived in Italy, I was around 12 years old, so it's been a few countries and a few different lived experiences in the last few years. And I've been in Norway for 4 winters now, which feel like an eternity, but it's been a wonderful country to live in. It's been a wonderful experience so far, and let's see where life brings me in the next few years. In terms of relationships and love, I think I've always had a very kind of romanticized idea of love. I've always very much lived in that hopeless romantic, very naive at times, I think, and in this kind of dreamland about Prince Charming and eventually Princess Charming as well. And I think I don't come from a background of healthy examples of love or inspirational examples of love. I think I've never really necessarily admired the way my family has approached relationships. And with friends, it was always, we've always discussed these things, but I guess, also not always super inspirational. So what happened a few years ago is that I decided that I wanted to redefine love for me and sort of how it felt on my own skin and through my own lived experiences. And that sort of happened at the same time as I both came out as bisexual and I also entered the sex positive spaces here in Norway. And that's when then I started practicing polyamory, and I got to know about polyamory through a friend, actually. Who was practicing it herself and had, I don't know, was just a humble observant of her life. And it all felt quite actually like it was resonating. And it was also quite representative of the way that I was practicing relationships and dating at the time, which was this very free-flowing, wanting to sort of discover as many things as possible about myself through relationships and trying to sort of, I don't know, my therapist at the time went by like process of elimination. Like, you don't know what you like, so try it out until you find it out. And I wasn't really ready to necessarily put labels or commit to anything or anyone. And so that's where polyamory came into the picture. I think polyamory clicked quite well for me as well, the moment in which, I think it was either through a book or through some discussions with friends, they had this parallelism between relationships and friendships. Mm. And I'm someone who values my friendships so deeply. Like, I'm deeply in love with my friends. And I have quite a few of them and quite a few intimate ones as well. And when there was that sort of parallelism between the two, it felt quite natural that it was something that belonged to me as well. Like, why can't I love multiple lovers the same way that I love multiple friends at the same time? In terms of the solo component, it's a term that I have to admit I discovered recently. But the moment that I sort of got to know about the term, it was something that resonated deeply and resonated as well with my journey throughout the last few years. And I think the solo component resonates a lot because I believe that we don't have many certainties in this life. Whether we have a permanent position, whether we have good relationships with our families, or whether we have good relationships with our friends, you never know what can happen in this world. We might have huge fights. The world is going a bit to shits, so you never really know what can go on. And to be honest, a permanent position means absolutely nothing. even though it may give us some sort of sense of security. But the one thing that I've always been really certain about is myself. I am born with myself. I will die with myself. I spend 24 hours a day with myself, whether I like it or not. So there's... I decided that in dating, I really didn't want to lose that. And practicing solo polyamory for me has been a way of reaffirming that in dating and making it so that it's a frame of reference where I can come back to myself every night. And I don't want to emphasize that necessarily on an individualistic level. Like, I'm not individualistic in my approach of dating. I'm still very communal and believe in sort of sharing and making decisions with my partners and friends. But I need to know that I'm there for myself always and forever, because this world can be very confusing and lots of things can happen. So I chose solo polyamory as a practice to sort of try to the best of my ability to align with this belief of mine. I think that's everything that I wanted to say as an introduction, and I'm happy to get to share more as we go on with the night.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing. Hard to follow that. It was really well structured. I'm not so articulated with my experience. So I'm Rodrigo. I'm from Mexico. I've been living in Norway for 6 months only, but I've been living in Europe for the last 3 years. I lived in Budapest, Nantes, France, and in Brussels. And I'm here in Europe because I was doing a master's, and I found a position here in Norway, and I'm moving to Norway. And I grew up in Mexico. I grew up in a conservative house. Conservative setting, I think, overall, although seeing that in perspective, my parents were really progressive in many ways, and I really appreciate that. And I grew up in a really conservative setting. When I arrived to Europe, I met my now partner, and she was in an open relationship setting. Then the master's program, and why I mentioned the master's program, is kind of important because I move out and move in so much from so many places because of the master's program. Each semester we moved into a different university. So for the first year we were together, we started as a open relationship, but then we realized that the feelings were there, and it was more like an affective and emotional relationship. So then it changed to a poly setting, but I think my experience was pretty uncommon, as the first year that we called each other poly, or we defined each other as poly, we were basically in a monogamous relationship because we were living together. But she was she was also with her nesting partner. So yeah, I think I have a soft launch into poly relationship, which was, I think, there was a lot of care and there was a lot of room for me to learn and to investigate and to nurture in many places without me being exposed 100% into the topic, right? So I think that was really good for me, because I had some time to deconstruct some of my previous beliefs. I think that's also that was really good for me emotionally, because I wasn't, I mean, coming from a really conservative place in Mexico, and Latin culture is really conservative in a way. So coming into a setting that it's completely 180 degrees different, it was like a shock, right? But then my partner, she really did a great job, and my method also did a really great job for fostering that and taking care of, you know, the insecurities, the validation, the reassurance that is needed in this type of settings. But then once I moved to Budapest back again, and she moved to Sweden, that's when we started practicing more the poly setting, right? I started dating people, meeting people, and since then I think I identify or and to, as also Thea and Margarita mentioned, for me this is kind of a new term for me. is something that I didn't know that existed until like not so long ago, but I realized that I was doing that for at least 1 year and a half. And since 1 year and a half, I've been moving from one place to another, and also that created a solo version of myself, right? I couldn't, when I was dating people, obviously I was really vocal with the fact that I was moving to a different place in 6 months, so that also leave a lot of room for people to decide not to have a long-term relationship in the setting that we were doing that exactly moment. So I think I've been moving in and out, and as I would like to conclude that it was more like a contextual situation for me. That's how I came up to this topic. But then I also, for me, it's really good for me, or something that I find a lot of peace and a lot of reassurance for myself, is that I like to investigate and learn and also give a reason why I'm doing this, why I'm taking these decisions into my lifestyle. And I think once I'm reading about solo polyamory, I think it fits really well, because I really enjoy, as Margarita said, the time with my friends as well, the time with my family too as well. And I think solo polyamory for me, it's a non-hierarchical structure, and that's something that I really appreciate a lot, and I really foster a lot. Of course, this is in practice, it's a different setting. on the table, it's really easy to follow, right? But then in the practice, it has a different layer of complexity. But I guess that's something that we can discuss on the go. So yeah, that was my introduction. I'm really happy to be here. Really happy to know that there is a beautiful community, and I'm really happy to enter into this community this way, sharing my experience. So yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank both of you. Why I decided for today specifically to have a little bit of a longer introduction before you fall asleep, people, is to really situate what it means to these two people that are sitting next to me in terms of creating a bit of a common understanding and what it is maybe that they can answer or what they can share about. And so now would be the moment where I look at you people and ask if there's something that, you know, scratched your brain, or like something that tickled something in terms of a question before I go into my questions, maybe. Yes, please.
So in my head, solo polyamory was maybe something more that you do when you're like single, and then when you're not single anymore, then you're not solo poly, but you move to this other box of like non-hierarchical polyamory, for example. How do you feel about this definition? Is solo polyamory that's my question.
It's a good question.
I think for me, when I encountered the top or the term of solo polyamory, I was, well, this defines me in a way, right? And I like to think that terms are descriptive, not prescriptive. Mm. And this term maybe describes a bit of myself, right? But there's many interpretations of the term as well. So I don't know if I can answer that question specifically.
Yeah, no, maybe yes. How you guys feel about it. Because, I don't know, when someone would tell me, oh yeah, I'm solo poly, I would assume that they don't have a partner. Like that would be my very personal interpretation of the term. And yeah, I wanted to hear yours. So I was not trying to get the ultimate definition of solo poly.
But I think it maybe could vary, and correct me if I'm wrong, between contextual solo polyamory. Mm-hmm. And by choice, solo polyamory.
I don't know what the like. You looking at me like I have other. Yes. I love that. Yes.
As the facilitator would. But I think I chose to be solo polyamorous. For me, it wasn't a context related thing necessarily. Mm-hmm. And even in situations in which I have been in committed relationships or in like labeled relationships or whatever one wants to call them, I still felt solo polyamorous. I think it's more a set of beliefs than it is necessarily... Yeah, it can be related to a set of beliefs as well. Especially because I'm not sure how I would feel if it was perhaps dating another solo polyamorous or another single. Maybe that would differ. But in situations in which I've interfaced with people in other relationships as well, I still felt that very it's me and then it's them in a way, or it's me and the person I'm dating and their partners. So it still felt like I was...
You were your own partner also.
Like I was still solo polyamorous in a way.
I heard a very, really interesting definition of solo polyamory is that you can think of it as hierarchical, but at the top of the hierarchy is you.
Exactly.
You are in a committed relationship to yourself first and foremost. You are the number one.
I feel like you also touched slightly upon the almost politics about solo polyamory in terms of that it's often misunderstood or can create these complex... but what is that? How can you... I had this conversation today, actually, with someone where I was trying to explain it. Yeah, but don't you see that it incorporates all these different things, and something is not necessarily just part of one thing, and here we are. Anybody else? Yes, please.
I didn't get the definition of solo polyamory. You said that you came... that you... recently learned the concept, but I didn't get the concept.
Yes. Thank you. For me, I think that what I wanted to do with this is actually to just make that point as well, that I don't think that there's a main understanding, a common understanding of what it is, but it's a very personal experience, and obviously there's people who would like to have this box of solo polyamory and put lots of definitions in it. And for me, what I like about it is that it's a little bit undefinable, but I define it as for what practices that I use in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's two things of what you said a bit. What resonates with me is that I have a relationship with myself as well in this, constantly, even though I may go out and have a purely sexual relationship with someone who I would consider a partner, but mainly that it's structured around having a sexual relationship, even though I don't like that. But having different parts of different partners for different things, but then also that time management where maybe I go weeks or months without necessarily investing to see this person because my life takes priority, what I want. I sound so harsh when I say that, but to incorporate people into what is already naturally in my life instead of making space for that person and putting away things that I already do or that I want to do in order to invest into this relationship is something that really resonated with me in terms of reading about this. And and also what you said before, I like that little bit of there was outside of this, but the rebel position that it creates a little bit of controversy in terms of poly people. Some may not understand what it is that you're solo poly. Some misconceptions that I've heard are that, okay, so you just use it as an excuse to fuck a lot of people and date a lot of people, but you're not taking any responsibility. And for me, that's a large misconception of what I would identify with. For me, it's taking actually a huge responsibility because I care for myself, but I also take accountability in what I communicate to my potential partners. And yes, this is true for polyamory as well, in a sense, but yeah, there's a lot of different things that resonates with me in terms of that. You're a little bit undefinable. Yeah.
Can I add a cultural component as well? Perhaps. And again, I'm not an expert in this, and it's more just maybe a feel to it. Like, culturally, Italians are very used to, like, coexist deeply with their partners, right? Like,
did you get that I'm Italian?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to make assumptions, but yes. But then, as you know, right, we come from, like, a history of where couples, it's a really important thing, and like there's this very sort of obsessive way of approaching sometimes relationships. At least that's my history, let's say, with the exposure that I had with my family. Solo polyamory is also a way of reaffirming sort of the importance. I'm part of that picture as well. It's so easy to lose yourself in a relationship, I think, no matter what label you put on top of it. And perhaps solo polyamory can be that sort of practice and reminder of, like, yeah, I will get lost in this relationship and in that relationship and in that situationship too, but I come back to myself every night. I'm just putting it out there as a thought rather than as anything that I've actually read.
I think also there is a layer of a setting. I don't know how to define that, but maybe just a setting of that. I threw a lot of Reddit threads, to be honest. That's my pure basis source of information. Yeah, it's many rabbit holes there. But what I resonate with, and I was when I realized that maybe I'm solo polyamory, or I practice solo polyamory, is that I do not have a nesting partner. Maybe I have a partner, but I don't have a nesting partner. And I could have different partners, but I don't have a nesting partner. And what I mean nesting partner is someone that I don't cohabitate with someone. So maybe that's the logistics layers of how to define solo polyamory, right? So, yeah, I think part of that definition is what I resonate with. I think it's good that we can discuss what does that mean. We can define that, and we can help to manage that.
And I mean, I don't think we're here to promote the name necessarily. Like, I'm not a fan of the name solo. Sorry,
you're not
handing out. No, not today.
You have to sign up for
it. You can come find me for them. But I think it is very deceiving, the name solo polyamory. It's not an excellent name to work with, but. It is what the ethical slut wrote about, and that's what we're here to discuss.
I actually identify much more with the ethical slut term than I would actually with solo polyamory. But that's just me. And yeah, I like what you said about nesting partners as well, that there's a, for me, not necessarily, even if I were to enter a relationship, would I see this as a main partner, a primary partner, a secondary partner? Would I want to share finances with this person? Would I want to share an apartment? I don't know. So for now, the journey of me identifying as solo poly is also asking those questions, because I don't want it to be a given and an assumption entering a new relationship at some point. Yeah. Do we have one more? Maybe we can ask some of my questions that I pre-prepare for you guys. And also feel free to, you know, take care of yourself in terms of, like, if you need to go to the bathroom, have more water, shift in your seat. So when you guys sort of came to understand this term, because you also are quite new to it, what is the... For example, relationship structure or dynamics that you would seek. No question. No answers.
You can start.
Okay, my turn. And I think that this is something that I recently kind of... And just out of context is that I think I'm I want to believe that Oslo will be my place that I will settle down in terms of live here, not settle down in in terms of you know what we're talking.
Not take it literally.
Yeah, no. So I want to spend more time here, and that's the first time in 2 years that has happened to me. And now I can see more in the future of how I'm going to build my relationships upon that. So if I'm looking for a structure of a relationship, but I really want to personally pursue something that is not hierarchical. I think, or in my experience, in different experience of being with poly people, is I find a lot of hierarchy in poly settings. And that's a struggle for me. I understand that sometimes when we take the decision of go out of the non-normative ways of having relationships, is that it could be an adventure, it could be something that we would like to pursue, and it could be a way of changing things. For me, my decision of being in a in a non-normative way of having a relationship is because I really believe, and as I said, sometimes for me the way I find a lot of guidelines or a lot of light in because if you've experienced it, it's, sometimes you get lost because we fall off the structure of how a relationship should be, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really hard at the beginning, and sometimes I have to make a political standpoint or like seek into a political view of how things are and why we are challenging this. So mm-hmm. so yeah, without going too much further on it, I think what I'm really looking into is seeking for non-hierarchical relationships. And I think when I mean relationships, is not only sex affective relationships, also friendships and a relationship for myself too as well, mm-hmm. a relationship with my family. I think it's really important to build communities. Maybe we don't see this in Norway a lot, but in other places, the care network that is not existent anymore. And if we build communities and if we build a care network by ourselves, it's a way of being kind of rebellious towards that, right? So that's my point of view. Mm-hmm. It's a really political one, I think so. But yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I started with a very dreamlike approach to it. I was like, I want two girlfriends and a boyfriend. That was my total like idea to it. The reality was not that way, necessarily. And I think the moment that it was put into practice, it was very much... the structure that I was desiring was the same sort of approach that I have with my friends. Like, if I take my time, I'm not a planner, but I like to see sort of ahead of my week. And during the week, I love to free flow and see, you know, oh, like, yeah, of course, there's a few things that you note down because everyone has a limited amount of times and we all have schedules and responsibilities. But, oh, what do I really desire to do today? Oh, I'd love to spend time with this friend, or I'd love to spend time with that friend, or I'd love to go to a museum or spend time with myself. And I sort of envisioned having, let's say, a network of lovers to a similar extent. My dream also eventually expanded to having a worldwide network of lovers, which is an ongoing process, not going super well, but because it requires time and commitment. But yeah, I think the reality is it's a lot more difficult to live a desire-based approach to polyamory. And therefore being solo and not necessarily having anyone to go back to at home other than myself, it requires having to reach out and organize with other people. And I thought it was going to be a lot more flowy and a lot more easier to sort of free flow through it. So that was the initial structure that I went into it. To be totally honest, to date, I'm evaluating whether solo polyamory is still relevant for me or not. I found it to be a frame that's a lot more difficult to put into practice, and perhaps to be a little bit critical as well. I don't know if we're the generation for that yet, right? Like, I think it's very experimental polyamory for us still. We still have a lot of, I personally still have a lot of biases and a lot of rewiring to do from what I've inherited from my culture, from what I've inherited and learned as accepted social behaviors from the different societies that I've lived in. So, I mean, I think relationships like friendships are supposed to be a nice fluffy place to come back to and not always a place of rewiring and triggers and having to handle those triggers and all of that, especially when you expand that to multiple people. And when, so it's a wide range of things happening. But yeah, so that was a bit my approach. I also believe in non-hierarchical setups, both if I'm dating someone else with another long-term partner, or if I'm dating another person who's single as well, or if I'm dating a couple as well.
Oh, the smorgasbord just keeps on continuing.
Wow, there's an infinite amount of possibilities. Yes. Once you sort of start exploring.
It's a really dirty math problem.
The things
wow,
I've seen.
Yeah. It really is. It's to be inclusive of all possibilities. Yeah, so that was my ideal setup. I don't know if I found my own setup. I think I'm still like I think that's also the beauty of being solo polyamorous, is that it taps a lot into my curiosity. I'm such a curious person. It's my biggest trait, but also my biggest enemy, because my brain is everywhere and I really want to get to know different things, different realities, different people. So I'm still curiously sitting in what is an ideal setup for me and what I've, in the name of process of elimination, eliminated as of now, or parked. Perhaps.
Parked.
Yeah, parked. Yeah.
You had a question?
I had a follow-up to something both of you said. Maybe can you elaborate on what does it mean to live non-hierarchically in a normative world to you? Like, I understand the concept of non-hierarchy, like no hierarchy, yeah, that's clear. But how do you practice that? How do you bring that into the a world that is designed to be hierarchical?
It's an ongoing process, I will say. The idea of, or I think, prioritizing time, it's a thing that I'm continuously challenging, in a way. And I think the way I practice it is just being completely honest with all the connections that I have, all the bonds that I have. Is this is happening? I mean, this week this is happening, and being completely honest in the whole horizontal approach of things, right? I think for me it's a more like a logistic situation, because I think. Or at least the will to be with someone, and you can call it love in a way, it's not a limited resource, but the limited resource is time and energy, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's that when we have to sit down and conversate about how we are going to scale. I mean, for example, me, I have a big issue because I have a really bad relationship with my work. I work a lot sometimes, and I have I take some time out of my personal time for work, and that also impacts my relationships or the other connections that I have. So for me, it's a continuous internal work of setting boundaries and setting boundaries with myself too as well. So for me, it's just a logistic situation in a way. Mm.
Well, I think the fact that I don't have anyone that I share finances with, that I don't live with someone else, makes me already a fairly non-hierarchical person, because I think those things when dating another person that has you called it a nesting partner already creates a little bit of a hierarchy. So to begin with, that's a hierarchy that I don't necessarily have. And in practice, I would again try to put it in parallel with friends. I don't necessarily think that I have a hierarchy amongst my friends, but I try to make during the week time to see all of my friends. Also in respect to the relationship that I have with my friends, right? There are those friends where you have pleasure in seeing every day. There are those friends that you have pleasure in, or naturally in the friendship, you've sort of created a seeing once a week as a nice, comfortable habit for everyone. But that doesn't mean that my relationship to them is based or is placed on a weighing scale in any sort of way. They're still my friends. So I think in practice, I would like to take a similar approach to living non-hierarchical polyamory. It just becomes a little bit more difficult when it's not reciprocated, or when the person that you're seeing does not necessarily have a similar type of setup and freedom, because that's when schedules come in, and that's when having to compromise your time and. So I think it's also about matches in a way. Like it's, I don't know if anyone can relate in having that friend or that lover or partner where like you just free flow so well. Mm-hmm. Like your weeks just, you don't plan and yet, bam, you meet, you do, you go, you, whatever it is. I think that's something that I aspire. But again, that's my very dreamy side. Mm-hmm. Part of my brain. It works with friends, and I'm waiting to see how it can work with lovers as well.
Yes, please.
I just wanted to say that I really valued your experiences, and it's been so interesting to listen to both of you. I also used to, for a period of time, call myself solo polyamorous, and then experimenting a bit with that. And I thought it was very cool that both of you were talking about this at the end of the day, like you wake up with yourself and you want to go to bed with yourself and you need to nourish the relationship you have with you as a person. And like, what I got out of what I was listening to was kind of that it sounds like both of you in a way don't want to get enmeshed or codependent in a deep relationship. And it's like, I was listening to it and for me it sounded a bit like to be solely polyamorous could be a way to protect yourself, to not be in a very in a relationship where you jeopardize losing yourself. And kind of what you were talking about for me sounded like something everyone needs also in a monogamous relationship to not get enmeshed or codependent. And if that is the incentive to be in a solely polyamorous way of living, is that the right incentive to live like that, to take care of ourselves? Because that is something we all should treasure no matter what relationship forms we're in, to not get enmeshed with other people. So I would just love to hear some more thoughts if that would be, because I also had a lot of luggage and bad relationships and monogamous relationship, and I didn't want to get that caught up in a relationship again. And after being solo poly for a while, I felt maybe it was actually something I did to protect myself because I was scared. And when I managed to work and heal some parts of that, to be polyamorous also means that I really, really have to have my heart open to the people I meet that I like, and I need to love them. And for doing that, I have to be very clear about my own boundaries and communication skills, and I have to be able to love the people I take into my life and not just keep them out there because I'm fearful that they will get me enmeshed or trigger my old codependency.
So, but do you feel then that solo polyamory means for you that you keep people at a distance? Is that how I understand it?
Well, that is kind of what I experienced, was that when I met other people who also had this dynamic, I felt that they were, I was when I was reading about it and romanticizing about it, I felt that this community would have more people who were open to love and communication, and that was finally what those kind of people I would meet. But I have met a lot of people I felt have been more emotional, unavailable, and just call it being solo polyamorous than actually being emotional available, because it takes a lot of effort to be emotional available for multiple partners.
And to be fair, I think there's also people in couples who are emotionally unavailable as well. Like it's a generic, perhaps, symptom that we have in today's society, which is a very individualistic society to begin with. I think we have lost a little bit in the last few years, a little bit more the sense of community and the sense that polyamory technically brings towards community. But just to answer your question, I think there's like, I am going to get this wrong, it's a double-ended sword. No, yeah. It's a double-edged, yeah? Edged is okay, there you go.
That's exactly what it is.
Got it, really.
I've been corrected on this a few times in the last few days. So, I think in my experience with polyamory and solo polyamory, I have noticed how it has been conducive towards my avoidance and towards my avoidance of commitment because, how could I ever commit to someone? But also towards my avoidance in expressing my needs. Because if, let's say, partner A, which is at the time my primary partner or my partner of reference or the partner that I'm exploring the most with, all of a sudden doesn't have time or doesn't have space or had space for my needs, then my avoidance would bring me to be like, oh, no, but I'll just go ask another partner, or I'll just go and date someone else, or I'll, instead of sort of facing the tough conversation of sitting down with that partner and having those tough conversations. So I think if you approach solo polyamory with that type of awareness, it's been a beautiful journey, but it's been painful as well, right? Because there's like, I've gotten to know that little side of me and how, and actually it was my therapist who asked me recently, she was like, so why exactly are you practicing solo polyamory if you're anxiously attached? And oh, by the way, there's this new avoidance side of yours that's popping up. And I was like, excellent question. Like, let's find out together. But then there's the whole other side of the coin, which is, or of the sword, if we want to continue with the same metaphor, that is, I've rewired a little bit on jealousy. I am facing my avoidance and my anxious attachment in a way that if I wasn't a monogamous relationship, I wouldn't. Because what happens with monogamous relationships or a one-way committed relationship, even though you might define yourself as polyamorous, is that you get very comfortable. So you have one exposure, but then you also have that comfort zone to always go back to, which is not necessarily always conducive for rewiring. Because in order to rewire, you need to expose yourself. And that doesn't happen necessarily if you have a committed relationship. And that's where I'm stuck, right? Because I'm so curious and want to do all that rewiring. And I have so many parts of me that I really want to get to know. But commitment sounds scary in that sense. So, and that's what I meant earlier by saying I'm not sure that we're the generation yet for polyamory, because I think if you go in it with the humbleness of saying it's a very experimental space for me and communicating to partners as well of like, this is sort of the struggles that I'm facing, I don't really know where to position myself, then it becomes a much more vulnerable space, but it becomes also a much more conducive space, I think, to work towards maybe polyamory. I'm not sure if, yeah, that made sense.
Yeah, what you said also, like, if we're not ready for it yet, I think the one part that I find is essentially missing a lot of times is the communication part. I don't feel like we've learned enough yet on how to really raise things to, you know, put it on the table, to discuss it properly in ways, because communication is so, it's so basic, but it's the main thing that I feel like is essential in understanding what we're doing constantly.
Absolutely.
With others and with yourself.
Absolutely. I've gotten to know about this, or there's a learning that I'm taking from these last 2 years, which is practicing radical honesty in relationships as well. Communicate, or like, I've started communicating like, hi, my avoidance side is coming out, and just FYI, it might disappear for the next few days. And I don't know, I think radical honesty is something very fundamental, for example, for me to have in a relationship as well.
Would you like to answer it as well, or do we want to have another question before we go to a small break? So one last question.
Not a question, but a response. I noticed earlier you said about, when you talked about flow, you said, have you guys ever experienced that when, like, suddenly schedules match with one person all the time? And I remember instantly being like, ah, it sounds amazing, it sounds so cool. And I think at the same time, now that we're talking about communications, it means we still have this like inner desire of not having to communicate and that things just magically working out the way we want without having to voice them. And I was like, and then first I identified, I was like, ah, it sounds so cool. And then you think about possibilities, you're like, wait, I'm in Disneyland right now.
It's, I think,
can
it's
avoid talking to people and to ourselves. And, and it's like, yeah, we still have those things in us, and I think everyone wish that they would just magically be understood. And you have that, and I have that, and I'm sure we all do in some degree. And when we like think about the dreams in Iowa, it's like, I'm gonna be strong and I'm not gonna be afraid of saying what I feel like I have to say, rather than everything's gonna just work out.
This resonates so much, and I feel like humans, like, like we humans, like we gravitate towards this, like, you know, state of least energy used. We all want to go to that couch, be safe, have that one, like, have everything so simple, and like to actually live life, it's all about fighting that urge to be a couch potato, right?
I just want to the word of codependence was brought, and what I understand by codependence, and maybe I don't have any background in I mean, I've been in a lot of therapy sessions, but a lot of them, but I think codependence, it's it comes from a power dynamic between partners, and I think on paper, and or if I would like to summarize what are the importance or what are the points that you need to have in order to look, or not need, but it would be preferable if you have it, if you go into a non-normative type of relationship, is have an open conversation, like open communication, having a responsibility, affective responsibility, being able to understand and to understand your partners. And I think once you have that, or once you manage to, and also self-awareness is really important. But if you have that cocktail of skills, I think the power dynamics disappear at some point. And I think, the codependence goes away. And I don't, when I practice, or if I say that I practice solo polyamory, is that it doesn't mean that I don't want to commit anyone. Mm-hmm. I like commitment, and I commit with people. Maybe it's not the commitment that we have learned in the relationship escalator of commitment means that I will get married with that person. But I like to say that I'm committed with other people's time, other people's feelings, other people's vulnerabilities. So I think we break the codependence while we open communicate, and we have all these tool sets that I mentioned. And I think that's preferable. And I think if there's some certain inclination to join or to practice this lifestyle, I think it's really important to sit down a bit and question yourself if we have that. And it is, we don't have to be ready to do it, but most likely we will have to face it in a way. So yeah, just wanted to resonate with that.
Can I answer very quickly before we... I wanted to point out that I totally agree with you. It is a dream-like way of... It's not realistic to free flow all the time and with everyone and everything. I think it was more my way of advocating for just a more desire-based way, which does require communication. So a bit, it's, I guess, the challenge of how do you allow for both things to coexist, free-flowing while also communicating while you do it, I guess is where my dreamland is at the moment, and trying to see how that realistically can translate into reality as well. So it's one of my primary struggles at the moment, so I'm right with you on it. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Codependence, commitment. I was thinking, I was a bit reflecting on myself, like, do I have a fear of commitment? I was like, not really, because I feel that in many ways I've been very committed to a lot of relationships, whether they have been very deeply emotional or just a long time friend, or what is a friend. And then I think for me I'm also very committed to myself, and that's what resonated with me. I'm very committed to myself and my journey, and it would be great to have some people along with it in some way or form. And those commitments can look very different, but I think what you said about challenging a little bit that that stepping stone of like walking towards marriage is what I'm also on. That's not necessarily the commitment that I want to pursue, perhaps, but it's the frame of reference that we have when we maybe associate with commitment. And it's very challenging. I think I will propose to take a break now, so you can stretch a bit, get some more water. Now that we're back here, I was trying to reboot back to where we were maybe from before. And is there someone who had a question while they were downstairs and thinking of something that they wanted to ask? Yes.
Yeah. One thing I'm thinking about is we talked about partners and how to structure your life. Does being solely polyamorous necessarily mean you won't have children? Is that kind of part of the package? Because it's easy for me to imagine like a life being solo polyamory without children, but with seems a bit more hard for me to imagine. So I'm just like wondering if that's basically part of the label or not.
I think yes.
I could add an perspective on that, because I do have children. I've just started exploring this, but what I noticed first time I heard about polyamory is basically that I am polyamorous already because I have two kids and I have two loving relationships with them and a loving relationship to myself. So it kind of feels like I have three partners already.
And
yeah. So for me, that doesn't exclude anything.
I was going to say something similar, but you said it so beautifully.
Yeah,
so
that's super beautiful. Yeah.
It's a yes and no. I think it's also what a little bit what you said before, or someone said before, that it's you, not necessarily on the top, but you have that self-relationships and whatever, you have someone that you're a caretaker of, in a sense of a child, or whether you're a friendship. It doesn't exclude anything, I feel, either. Do you have any strong...
If I have to be totally honest, I don't know if it's anything that I've thought of that far ahead. I have had discussions with partners in terms of, especially partners who have had other partners that they've been with longer or perhaps married to. I've had discussions with them in terms of their plans. But not necessarily have I thought of that myself. A, because I don't really know if I want children or not. But if I liked your perspective on it a lot, to be honest. And I mean, if you look at a lot of parents these days who are divorced and then sort of redate, I think maybe one thing that divorced parents can teach us is how you can still have a relationship to your children the way you would have to your friends and to your family, meaning, I guess, your parents and siblings and such, and include sort of that component of kids in that network around you, perhaps. But in terms of having it with one of my partners, no, I haven't gotten that far. Yeah.
Yes.
That's actually something I thought of and was just like talking about with people, just thinking of my future and thinking, oh, but when I do want kids, do I then move to hierarchical polyamory because I'm gonna, like the father of my children is going to be my nesting partner, and then just logistically it makes more sense to have it hierarchical. What I actually came to as like the ideal, the dream, would be to actually stay solo polyamorous, because also very much about rejecting the hierarchy. But raise the kids kind of as a community. So the dream is to build this community and to have it maybe in Björklandet. and keep as like my loving journey a solo polyamory, and just incorporate kids into it. And I don't know, the father of those children, maybe there won't be a father, maybe it will be a donor or whatever. But even if there is a father, then it's like also kind of their business, how they want to proceed it. But what really I feel like about myself is to stay polyamorous, but still stay solo, and just have all those... community people and all that community love to raise the children, to help with that.
I saw one hand over there. Would you like to go?
Yeah, I think like I agree that solo polyamory is like the worst name in the universe, because I feel like everybody assumes you're single, right? How I understood it when I was reading about it, it's more about you're rejecting kind of pre-assumptions about certain, like, you know, when you say hierarchical and you say you have a primary partner, that comes with a set of assumptions that you're making about how you're supposed to do in certain situations, and you're not supposed to question them. You're supposed to kind of just abide. And I feel like for me, solo polyamory means like all of that goes out of the window, and I'm sure like every relationship is unique, every relationship needs to be negotiated, and things need to be kind of agreed, and they evolve and they change and we adapt, and there is no one relationship that has veto power, that has just assumed this things in it, right? So for me, solo polyamory doesn't exclude the possibility of living with somebody 24/7, or having kids, or being in a commune having kids, or all these alternative ways of being. It just means that I assume less. And I like what Rodrigo said in his introduction, like you have to I thought I would never be solo polyamorous when I first read about it, but then when I started deconstructing these assumptions about relationships, I started realizing, wait, this is starting to seem like solo polyamory, right?
Mm. Yeah. I think we are, and I really enjoy that we are discussing terms and labels too as well. And I think we are, and solo polyamory, it's also like a sibling of relationship anarchy in a way. So I think terms are good, labels are good. And I think we are, once we go outside of the norm, terms are really good because they give us some kind of a security of how things look in the future or how things will look into a future. And but sometimes there's an issue by using terms, they can also box how we are going to manage a relationship. And also while boxing the way that we are constructing the relationship, it's also imposing some duties too as well. And I think while imposing some duties, we are also replicating normative ways of having relationships. So I think it can fall as well into just having multiple normative relationships instead of just having one, right? So I think what I really enjoy about this topic or this conversation is that it's good that we challenge the labels, and labels are good to describe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to see, okay, maybe this applies to me and I like it, and this is just describing what I feel or what I want to do. But when it's prescribing, is that we are bound to do that. And I think for me personally, I don't think that's a setting for me. So I think just coming back a little bit to the point of solo polyamory, I think it also has some resemblances with relationship anarchy. And I think I'm also kind of, and that's another rabbit hole that we can discuss, but I think there are some resemblances of solo polyamory and relationship anarchy. So just answering that.
Would you still like to answer, like, ask the question you had?
Yeah, again, not an answer, more of like a response, airing some thoughts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really inspired me a lot what you said about involving other people. And I was like, the first thing that came to my mind is like, hey, some of those people don't have any biological ties with those children. And then it started to get me thinking. Remember having a conversation, Kiana, who's my partner, about the importance of the biological bond between generations. And it's funny because like now we're you're opening the possibility again, or you're putting it on the table, like it doesn't have you don't need those biological bonds to be involved into taking care of a child. And that's also something that we can learn from separated couples and reconstructed new couples, where only one of them might have a biological bond to the children, while the others doesn't, and can still, and in some people are still equally active. The thing is that it comes back to a much more traditional, but maybe forgotten model, where we used to say that it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm.
Where we, like, I think historically we might have completely forgotten that to this day, but we come from a place where this was the norm actually. Mm. Raising children was something everyone was involved with, and now society has pressured us more and more into putting all the responsibility on what we call the nuclear family, which is just parents, biological people responsible for those children's being here. And it's not a model that has any kind of historical like sustenance, in the sense that it hasn't been on for long enough for us to know if it actually works. And honestly, I'm not super interested in understanding if it works. This is not where we come from. We have thousands of years of histories about not doing it that way, and arguably I guess doing better before. But there's not gonna be any structural societal change without understanding of perceived responsibilities towards children of others.
Mm.
And to me, they really go hand in hand, so it's just opening up that the fact that that's yet another thing that needs to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank you for that, yeah.
There's a question.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'd like to raise a question that troubles me, has been troubling me for some time, and I'm curious whether it resonates with you all. And it's the question of the power of therapeutic expertise, psychotherapeutic expertise, because I think it goes quite often without saying, like we refer to our therapists and to attachment theory and other therapeutic concepts, but I'm curious whether any of you have ever experienced any instances where psychotherapy hinders your development towards self-exploration and non-monogamy, because and it's been, I have to admit, it's been my experience where attachment theory was used as a sort of double-edged coin against the non-monogamous format of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious whether you've experienced anything like that.
I want to ask the question to you first, but then opening up for others to answer as well, if that's all right.
Yes. I mean, my therapists have been primarily Italian, because although I speak way worse Italian than I speak English, apparently psychologically it works best in Italian. But that also means that there's a whole cultural base. That's if we're having these discussions in Norway, in Italy, it's really, they're like 10, 20 years behind us as a society. So I've had two therapists that have, including my current one, who have told me not to indirectly, or who have sort of challenged me on it. I think, like everything in therapy, you take out of it what you need. So it's been a point to start thinking from, but not necessarily is what they say ultimate law, right? Like, I think they have, for example, one interesting point that my previous therapist brought out was, you know, how do you have really organic relationships when everything is so structured? I was like, that's a really interesting question. And then it brought me to try and explore free-flowing, for example, like how do I integrate the organicness of relationships? Another one or another thought that they brought was sort of, how do you find safety in a polyamorous structure, especially going in polyamorous like you would in a monogamous setup? Because one thing that monogamy has in its favor is that you have exclusive time to spend together, and that creates a safety base between the two people in the couple. How do you find that within a polyamorous setup that by default has a lot of inputs and uncertainties and can create instability? So if you use it as food for thought for yourself, it can be actually quite conducive to have someone argue against you. But yes, I've had the world against me, including my parents, actually. So, yeah.
In my experience, and it's, I was super lucky to have my therapist. She has a specialty in gender and also non-heteronormative relationships. So I think I was just super lucky to have her. So yeah, as you said, I think there are also professionals, and they have professional views of things. And I think it's a good practice to challenge that when you are acquiring those services in a way. I think it's really important to see if they have the opportunity and they have the expertise to guide you through that too as well. Because, I mean, attachment theory, it's also something that it's been fairly discussed as the person who made, I don't have the history of it, but I've just read a couple of things about it in attachment history. Theory is not scientifically based. It's just something that they came up with, and we use it quite a lot, and it resonates and makes sense for some of us. But if we go through layers, there is something that it doesn't quite fit, right? So yeah, in my experience, it helped me a lot. My therapist has one of the cornerstones of how I managed to build healthy relationships through or like non-normative relationships. So yeah, I think I can speak on my experience that it's really important that we find specific help that or a specific professional that can help us too. So.
Well, I just want to say that of yes, it's limiting, and yes, it can be expensive. Mm-hmm. And finding that balance is like every individual has their own journey in that. And I'm also there's a sense of like empathy that is activated in me right now. That's like it's so sad that there's professionals who have that much authority in that space with you and are maybe not understanding that. There's other things that are also that you might know better than this person and not giving you that space to explore that in the way that you might need and you might feel like. I want to also just check in here. Was it something to answer to this question? Yes, please.
To me personally, it can definitely be limiting because it's dependent, like you're at the mercy of the therapist understanding the issue and them being tolerant and accepting to the issue. So my poly journey was delayed by about 10 years because when I brought it up to a therapist, it was just completely shut down. That's a stupid idea. Why would you ever do that? The same person also like I'm part of the kink scene and I entered the kink scene 10 years ago while I was going into therapy for the first time. And that person was also not understanding about that at all. Luckily, I had enough exposure with that community to be able to discern their opinion and go, well, I'm sorry, you're just fucking narrow-minded and I won't listen to you. So I like the points that you brought up that it can help, but it can also hinder, and you're basically just at the mercy of that person actually being open to the idea or being willing to explore it with you instead of just shutting it down.
Yeah, I also want to share.
I'll come to you. I swear, I see you. I hear you.
Because my therapist is like this 75-year-old man, like very disconnected from my world. And I actually made my therapist read Polysecure because I was like, I don't think you understand, like, any, like, we don't have any common ground, and, like, just having, like, both of us having read that book gave us, like, at least a shared vocabulary, which helped a lot, and then, yeah, like, then my therapist could help me, like, do what I wanted to do better instead of telling me what to do, and, yeah, I guess the reason I wanted to share this is just, like, yeah, therapists are also just people who also are curious and are supposed to learn. And you can bring what you see in the real world to them as well.
Yes, my dear.
Sorry, I didn't see that. No, I just wanted to say, like, rule of thumb that has served me really well with therapists for many reasons. I tried, like, 7. And if a therapist is prescriptive, if they're telling you how you're supposed to feel, if they're telling you what you're supposed to do, it's a very big red flag, right? Like, so they're there to create a safe space, to create a place where you can feel authentic, and you don't feel, ideally, you shouldn't feel at all how they feel about what you're saying, in the sense, judgment or any sort of way. So if you feel that from your therapist, run away.
Yes.
Time to change. Yeah.
Oh yeah, please.
Doesn't he say being a therapist? Yes. I mean, that is really important. Like you just said, I mean, being set back 10 years by someone who's supposed to help, that is terrible.
Mm.
Yeah, and if it doesn't feel right, there's a good reason for that.
So I'm in psychoanalysis, which is the kind of therapy where you lie on the couch 4 times a week and can't see your therapist, and she asks you questions without really giving you a lot of input. And I was trying to think, or I find it hard to articulate whether that has either helped or hindered me in polyamory. But what is or has been striking has been how even though she has never voiced any opinion at all on the matter, I'm continuously very, very, very fearful of how she thinks about it. Which has more to do with probably my own censor about this and my own resistance even to this desire of polyamory. And this fear of, I don't know, the group or authority is powerful, but it's also very subtle.
Yes?
I have a pretty basic question, I think, but I am completely new to all of this. I am aware of polyamory. It's multiple partners, but that's kind of where the drop-off is. So you've mentioned structure in relationship or hierarchy. I know what hierarchy is by something being above something else. But in what sense are you using that word? Is it is it more of a male-female classic hierarchy that we're trying to avoid, or is it like the responsibilities? Could you explain a little bit what you mean by that? Because it's been mentioned quite a few times that I want to understand.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Please, my guess.
So, the way
I will answer is
the way I see hierarchy, and it has different angles. I think so. First of all, it's resources, which is time and energy. I think so. There are boundaries sometimes in poly settings, and those boundaries are given some privilege or some access to time and yep, there are different how can I word this?
Levels.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and those boundaries give them a hierarchy in a way. I don't know if I'm
kind of a conditional thing where
exactly.
Someone gives something and then they expect something in return.
As an example, one of my first experiences being with someone that I was poly, we had some certain rules. For example, we couldn't hold hands in public, you know, and we can only see each other 2 times per week, something like that. So those kind of rules, and that was rules are set by the partner. Her partner. So also I think that gives a hierarchy to the partner, that they can decide what are the boundaries that that person can have with other bonds. So that's why that's my idea of hierarchy too as well.
No, I'm very aligned with that. And just to like maybe terms that you might have heard before as well, is like defining someone as a primary partner, secondary partner, tertiary partner. So it's just a way of structuring your time, resources, and energy, and also for people to like reference back to, in order, I guess, to also manage expectations. And you know, if I'm a secondary partner and I might not rely on that, and they are also my secondary partner, or might like it, then all becomes confusing if hierarchies are not the same, but I will know how to reference to that person in a way.
It's like you mentioned with your friends before, everyone being on the same kind of level.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be like if I had best friend number one, best friend number two, close friend,
yeah.
Friend, acquaintance. That would be my hierarchy, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And also a practical, or the way I see it and the way that I would like to pursue is that in a non-hierarchical, just to give you a practical idea, for example, if I have partners that are not comfortable with a setting, it's not something that I will go or because of my partner is not comfortable with that setting, I'm not going to impose it to all of the partners that are in the setting, right? It's something that I will sit down and I will discuss with everyone, and I will see what is the middle ground. But the imposition of it is what makes the hierarchy for me too as well. So so yeah, that's something that I kind of come up with, and it helps a lot just to have a open conversation with everyone, is that they, this is happening, how we can meet in the middle, and are you agree, do you agree or not, and this is setting expectations and that. So yeah.
Thank you.
I have a question for Rodrigo. Was your first meeting was hierarchical in polyamory, and how did you move out of it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It was as I said, it was a really kind of unique setting, because yeah, it was hierarchical in a way, but at the same time it was hierarchical because of time, and she had a primary partner for 7-8 years. They were open, but then when when we started the relationship, we realized that it was not only an open setting. We were having some feelings, and that's how we opened into a poly. But it was for me, it felt that it was really horizontal in a way, because her partner Meta, they were really open to conversate how the setting will be, and I think that took off a lot of the hierarchy of that. And I'm super lucky to have that setting, because I've seen it in different places, and that's not the normally it's a really imposed hierarchy, and obviously if you enter into that you agree on that, but for me it's not the best setting personally. I know that people enjoy it, and it's all right, I don't mind. This is not making any value or anything. But yeah, at the beginning it was hierarchical, but at some point after conversation, they bringing me to the table and conversate how is the best setting for the three of us, it took off a lot of the hierarchy. So yeah.
Because I found myself in a setup that was like the intention was to be non-hierarchical, but then the reality was hierarchical, and I didn't realize, I guess, until I kind of eventually like ended things, because it wasn't what I was looking for. And I guess like it can also happen that like, because I didn't realize how much veto rights the other partner had, just because it wasn't talked about, and I also kind of accepted it, because I was just like, yeah, but you were here first and you need to approve of me, and you need to, I don't know, like I also started fawning, so yeah. I don't know, I guess the reason I'm sharing is just that it's not so black and white.
Super scum. Mm. And just to add to that, actually, I recently, through one of the other panel talks, realized how, for example, the time that you have been with a partner can also create a hierarchy, for example.
Mm.
Like, if I'm entering a relationship with someone and that someone has been for 5 years with someone else, that already creates also an amount of time that you haven't had with that person. So there's a whole bunch of knowledge and things that that person can relate to the person that you're dating that you are unable to. And then, of course, with time, that evens out. But at the beginning, it can create a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, with if there's shared finances, if they're living together, or if they might have children, as previously mentioned, that inherently creates some sort of hierarchy, whether it's defined as non-hierarchical or hierarchical.
I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, am I actually non-hierarchical? I'm like, I put myself first, and that is also some form of like hierarchy, that I put myself first. So you know what, I need to do another panel on this to really understand myself. But I think hierarchy in terms of relationships for me is also just taking away the assumption of what you just said, of that, okay, so you've been with this person for 5 years, and I'm not going to go in and assume that you have this magical and loving relationship that I can't create with you from the start. Like, challenging a bit the hierarchy that we are often delivered by society, by the patriarchy, by different standards and associations. So for me, it's more about what we've been talking about a little bit before, like just questioning and not assuming.
I think also too, what helped me reframe it a little bit is, again, putting it on the same level as friends.
Mm.
And we've all met people recently, right? Or made a friend recently, and they've all had a another best friend, let's say, that they've known for 15 years. And I don't think it's so much about perhaps replacing those 15 years, but more discovering what your place is within that person's realm. But I don't know, I found it that in relationships it's much harder to put it into practice. And it might be because romantic love can be a lot more confusing and difficult to navigate.
And prioritize too as well.
And there's the whole time component that as well can...
And things happen in your body.
Wow,
and stuff.
Yeah. So much. Yeah.
So we're starting to approach our unfortunate end of this, but we still have some time for like a couple of last questions. And if you don't have any, or if you don't come with any, I still have some. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. Don't run away just yet.
I'm curious, how did you meet your partners? I find... As soon as I'm open about being polyamorous, connections quickly end. How has that been for you guys?
I've met my partners primarily through the sex positive community, actually, through these type of events, talks, workshops. I've gone to a lot of the sort of educational or more educational, workshop-y type of events. That's a great way of connecting with people. And I've had to drift out quite a bit of dating apps or friends of friends, because I have a lot of heteronormative friends, and therefore their network does not... I'm not interesting to their network
in
that
interesting
sense.
But you're not actually interesting. Mm-hmm.
I'm exotic
yeah.
to their network, which is not something that you want to be necessarily. So yeah, that's how it's been. But I think it's actually a great way of kind of exploring the crowds, right? Because it automatically excludes quite a bit. So you're left with a smaller pool to date, which has its pros and cons. But yeah.
In my case, how I met my partner was just a circumstance. Yeah, she was studying the same master's that I was studying. And maybe I commit a lot of mistakes and going into dating apps trying to preach or not preach. I didn't want to take anyone into the community or anything. But
secretly, yes.
No. It was my idea. It was just to meet people, to be honest. And I had a lot of mini breakups because of that. And it was... In my experience, it was like, yeah, this is cool. This dude is going to leave in 6 months. Why not? I mean, I'm going to try it out. Let's see. But then when feelings start, and then mostly all of them, they weren't they didn't practice the lifestyle. And at some point it was like, okay, I mean, now I'm falling into you and I don't want to have this, so I'm going to leave. So a lot of mini breakups for the first year, and I think I learned through that. And I think as Margarita says, just finding your community, and there are sex positive apps too as well. There are apps that you can filter people through their relationship inclination. I don't know how to call it. So yeah, I think if I could advise something, is to skip the part of having a lot of mini breakups, because it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. I have had no hardship, obviously, no. No, I think that it's very hard to meet someone, especially who's not maybe been or is at any way interested in a sex-positive community or in polyamory or in kink or in, like, all these, like... 'cause my box, when I put more things in there, it grows smaller and smaller. Like, that dating pool is, like... maybe two people at some point. And to find those two, three, four right people is really hard. And for me, it's been, for example, the solo polyamory journey has been quite liberating in the sense that I've also just realized that maybe there's just some people that I can have this need met with. And this can be what we are about. And not in the sense of that I prioritize them differently in terms of hierarchy, more the understanding that ah, you are there and you're coming from that space and that fits me in where? Ah, right here. Great, then we can have this in common. And then I can, you know, maybe have someone on their side that just like in the expansion of myself, also just maybe having some limitations to the partnerships, which I found liberating and understanding, can be, of course, sad because you would maybe have, you would like to be more of yourself in each partnership. Mm. But, yeah. Yeah. Would you like to? Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, like, if you want to go on the dating apps, there are, especially on Field and on Hinge, I at least have people in Oslo area that are non-monogamous. So, and more than I would have expected.
Mm. Just look around this room. yeah.
Maybe we should create our own app.
Oh. I actually thought, oh, we should like do a poly party where the monogamous people have to wear a, like a hat or something.
Make them very obvious.
Just to assemble everybody.
Yeah. Would you like to like offer any advice or anything that you wanted to bring to the talk today but you didn't get to speak on before we close the session today?
I have my secret diary with me, actually. That
I have some notes here, too.
Yeah.
I think I didn't... I couldn't elaborate on that. I really like what you mentioned about community. I grew up with my aunts, with my cousins, and with friends of friends because my mom was too busy working and my dad, too. And I think... the only difference of that, or like we grew up together because we had, my mom has 11 siblings, huh? And my dad has 7 siblings. So in Latin America, we grew up with our family, right? And it was beautiful at some point. At some point, it was, oh, this is too much. But I think we can take that, right? We can take that and we can, the only difference of that setting or having more partners and partners taking co-parenting too as well. Maybe no, there's no a biological link with the kid or whatever, but it's a possibility and we've been doing that for a long time.
Mm.
And I think as I say in the beginning, I think there are two types of or maybe there are more types, but the way I see it is that it's for me, this is the answer of many of the things that are not working out well in the society as well, because being in a non-heteronormative relationship style also challenges patriarchy, challenges capitalism in a way, challenges a lot of things.
Mm.
Which is rooted and we break a little bit the inertia of how things are, because I don't know if we could agree, but the way that things are right now, we are not working out. We are,
we
do agree with that. So I think that's also this is also like some kind of a rebellion towards that and changing a little bit the way I see it. And maybe this is the way I feel, or I get some air, because this sounds beautiful, but there's a lot of work to be done here, and it's a lot of insecurities, a lot of solo time, a lot of things, a lot of traumas, and a lot of things that you're breaking, the construction. So yeah, I think the way I see it and that I really find relief on is that we can build a community, and that community will collectively make things better. But that's my own perception of things. Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's working for some, not everybody, and I want it to work for more people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. What about you?
I actually had the same
sorry
last, no the same last point of, I think the one, definitely the one thing that this journey has helped me with is create a community, whether it's a community of friends, community of familiar faces that I get to come in a room and see lots of faces that I've seen in the past. Let's not be individuals who are part of a community, but let's have a communal approach.
Mm.
And remember that we're not alone. I would suggest that if this is, whether you're at the beginning, in the middle, or towards the end of your journey in polyamory, reach out. Mm. Reach out to people, even if it's just that one sentence or that one word that they said that sort of inspired you and you'd like to take a coffee with them and have a conversation. We have a lot of friends who are heteronormative and not necessarily can they comprehend us in our entirety, I think. And two last sort of words of advice, if I can even give words of advice, but like, be unapologetic. Be unapologetically you throughout this journey. And trust your intuition throughout it all. Mm. Even if it's, as I said, that one little spark that person. But share your story. Talk to people. You're not alone in this. We're not alone in this. I've yapped my way through polyamory, to be honest. Talking about it with almost anyone I've met, and that's actually served me quite a bit. Like, because then people come with their own inputs and such. So. Yeah, yap your way through polyamory.
Yappity yap. And we do some good yapping today, too.
Yeah.
So thank you much for coming, everybody here as well, not just you guys, but everybody bringing questions and thoughts, perspectives. I really loved it, and I hope you had a good time, and welcome another time.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.